This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 465, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. You beautiful things, you. Pick the Week podcast. This is episode 465. I am Josh Flanagan, and with me is Connor Kilpatrick.
Hey, Josh.
And apparently Paul Montgomery is on a train. He is on a train. That's not even a joke.
Yeah.
I like it as a literal thing.
I like that he's leaving his town. He doesn't often leave his town.
No.
His house. So this is all of this is a plus.
I can only imagine it's by gunpoint. Come with us now if you want to live.
Okay. He'll be back next week.
We are iFanboy. We like comic books. Every week we read a bunch of them. One of us picks the one they thought was the best book. We call that the pick of the week. And we talk about it on the podcast. We're going to talk about other books from the week and some other stuff. This should be an interesting conversation today following that stuff. You know what? I take it back. It'll all be interesting. I don't mean to minimize
it. Don't act like it's going to be an unusual thing that the conversation is interesting.
Well, it could go either way.
What am I wasting my life for then?
Well, that's a long – this is an interesting conversation, but we don't have time for it. Before we get going, we're going to talk about what happens in the book. So if you haven't read them and you're worried about being spoiled, you are warned now. Come back and listen to them after you've read them. You can see a list of what the books are. It's not our problem, buddy. Yeah. We do what we can.
It's true.
But you know, you're on your own. So come back after you've read them or just listen because honestly, you know, who cares? It's not like this is the Walking Dead television show getting spoiled for everybody in the world except a few people. Ouch. Which is ironic, given that the comic book is never, ever spoiled.
It's funny, right?
Yeah. Connor, you had the pick.
I did.
You can tell that because I'm talking.
The last pick for me for 2014, and it's Birthright, number 3, from Image Comics. Josh Williamson, Andre Bresson, and Adriana Lucas is the colorist. Pat Brusseau is the letterer. And first of all, thanks to everyone who told us on Twitter and on our website that we should be reading this book, because I skipped past it. And this book joins the pantheon of books that we were recommended that we loved, like Checkmate way back in the day, and Scott Pilgrim even. And because, you know, we usually read a lot of stuff, but every once in a while something slips through the cracks.
I actually read this before that happened.
I'm saying it for me and Paul.
Well, I'm just saying don't lump me in with the people who don't know what's going on. Although, to be fair, mostly I don't know what's going on.
So Paul and I talked about when the first issue came, or the second issue came out, how we didn't read it originally. Anyway, thank you. Birthright is a really interesting and fun series, and what I like about it is there's a lots of things going on, and they're all good. And in the story of the book, if you haven't read it, is that the first issue opens with a little kid and the father playing fetch in the park. Not even catch. He was like, "Go get the ball," and the kid runs in the woods and ends up through some magical portal in another dimension. It's kind of like Lord of the Rings-esque. And while he's off in that world, the family's life is falling apart, as often happens when a kid goes missing in our world. And I thought that was going to be the story. And I thought that was going to be really interesting. And then the big twist. And the first issue was that actually the kid comes back many years later as an old like barbarian warrior. And he must now save Earth from what's happened from the other side bleeding into it. And meanwhile, in the intervening years, his family's completely fallen apart. His parents have gotten divorced and his brother's, missing his brother, and he's getting into trouble. And then you find out actually the kid came back. He's evil. He's working for the big bad in the other dimension.
He's been corrupted.
Right. Well, he's coming back with evil intent, which is to take over Earth. And so now we have, but everyone thinks he's here. It's sort of like a Terminator scenario, right? I mean, that's what I thought in this issue, because this is the one where they bust out of the police station because he got arrested. And so here he's taking all the cops out while he's getting away. And I thought very much,
I can't wait to see them retread this same comic book in 30 years.
Oh God. So it reminded me.
Come with me if you want to live.
Seriously, it reminded me very much of when Arnold Schwarzenegger's Terminator boasted up out of the police station. Anyway, so now you've got parallel storytelling going on, which is we're watching. And what is his name? What is the main character's name? I don't know.
Jim?
Mike.
Chris?
Mike.
Conan
Mikey.
Guy?
Mikey.
Pretty sure it's Conan Guy.
Conan Guy. We're watching Mikey's development in the past in the other dimension. So we in this issue, we get scenes of him literally first in the dimension trying to find his way home, and then being found and saved from a couple of giant monsters. And then we're seeing him in the real world, Conan Guy, on a sort of crazy road trip with his brother and dad as they escape the police because the mom wants nothing to do with it. Because, moms. And so we're seeing them going to track down the first of five evil mages. That's what he claims his quest is. And
that's some classic broadcast energy transmitter stuff right there.
And then we see the first evil mage, and he's sitting on a porch somewhere in a rural town. Looks like Josh's fantasy life. Although there's
it's too close.
There's an evil cat, so they're going to go kill him or something. And I just like that there's a lot of interesting things happening. I would almost be fine if any of these were the story. Mm-hmm. Like if the book was just him as a kid in the dimension, I'd want to read that. If the book was just them on this crazy road trip, I'd want to read that. And the art is fantastic from Andre Bresson.
Well, and that's really the thing that I wanted to
Tour de Force
bring up.
Issue with all the monsters in the other dimension.
Is that I think originally I'd heard from somebody like, yeah, it's pretty good. The art's not great. And I'm going through this and I'm thinking I don't remember who said it.
What lunatic said that?
I don't remember.
Was it you?
How's that? It wasn't me. I'm going to look at you. I'm going to say, I don't remember. Does that help
recall,
you?
Senator.
But I'm looking. So that's like stuck in my head. And I'm going through. I'm going, what are they, nuts?
Yes.
From a couple of standpoints. From the one standpoint that I think the book is the absolute strongest in is a fantasy design standpoint. Mm-hmm. The monsters, the armor, the weapons.
The costumes.
There's this shot of, I don't know what her name is. I think it's a her. And she's riding on top of that thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like
that's a woman.
An orc with tusks and a helmet.
She's riding an orc, basically. Yeah.
That design altogether, that like battle cat orc thing, and like her helmet and the pink dreadlocks and her little staff. Like, there's just so much going on there. It's wonderful fantasy design.
I'm looking at the five mages page.
Yeah.
And those are all great designs.
Yeah, exactly. So the storytelling's pretty strong, but the design is really the thing that. It works. It works really, really well. And then sort of when you get back to the – across from that page you're talking about, which is the mages, mm-hmm. and you see them getting in the car and driving away, which is funny. Like,
his little hatchback.
That's almost simpler.
Right.
Like look at the faces in the third panel. Like, it's a little Somni going on there, and the color is really nice.
The color's great, the way that they imply the driving with the red streaks on the side. I'm just impressed the hatchback's got all that headroom for the giant Conan guy.
You would be surprised what the people at Kia are doing.
I get people surprised all the time.
Actually,
when I drive a Mini Cooper.
That is a Subaru Forester, and I can vouch for that headroom. It's a nice, roomy car. That's that specific model.
I just think this is great. I really do, and everyone who buzzed about it was right. And we keep banging this drum, but it's another example of an image book that is telling a different kind of story and telling it really well. and hopefully finding success in it. I think this is great.
This will be a movie.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. It's on Skybound, for God's sakes.
I'm looking through this, and I can't find a reason why someone would tell you this is bad art.
I don't know. And I don't, I like literally, it was just like sort of a thing that somebody mentioned. So it's the only thing I think of as I read it. It's not bad. I think it was just that, like, well, no, the art could be better.
Conan's got some amazing hair.
I guess if it was Frank Quitely, it could be better. But other than that, I think it works perfectly for what it is. And I really.
Yeah, the kids look like kids. They don't look like little tiny adults, which is always a plus for a book with kids in it. And the
face of Conan Guy.
Yeah.
Is sort of youthful underneath all that, which I like. You know, like they'll do the sort of somber look at his face, and he kind of, you can see like there's a kid under there. You can see like an innocence, or maybe I'm putting there in my mind, but it's definitely pretty good.
Who do you think the main character of this book is going to be?
The brother.
That's what I think too.
The redhead brother.
Yes. And by main character, well, clearly the main character is Conan Guy because he's the star of both. But I think he's the antagonist. So who's the
No, but he's Terminator.
I mean, right, I think when I read the second issue, I thought to myself, okay, I think the brother's going to end up being the hero of this story.
He has to be.
Yeah.
And the you know, here's the thing. The mother's kind of horrible in this.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit one of those things, if you were looking at it from a male fantasy perspective, it's kind of unfair that she got the raw end of the deal. So I think that they're going to have her come around in some way, and she's going to get her heroic moment.
Maybe.
Like, she's in denial right now, which makes her horrible. But then again, when it comes back around from a storytelling standpoint, it's going to be pretty tough for the dad to dig his way out of the I left you on the curb scenario. Because even if he was right, which he is,
right,
you are not talking your way out of you left me on the curb.
Well, they already hate each other, so it's
I know, but he said to her, like, she made her choice, and I was like, ooh. Even from a divorce perspective, I just was like, oh, that's gonna hurt. That's gonna be a problem.
Gonna hear about that another time.
But she's got a good opportunity to have like a really neat turnaround at some point. Or maybe not, because her son actually is corrupted by evil. And I like that, by the way, that he has not been turned because he decided to go with the bad guys,
right,
but because, you know, he was defeated and they sort of took him over, which obviously leaves a story point open, but it also allows you to feel compassion for him.
I mean, it gives him the wiggle room that he can still make his heroic turn back to the good side. But I also like the idea of the brother who is, you know, literally hero worshiping him now.
Yeah.
Being, you know, having to save the day, but we'll see where it goes.
He's pretty badass.
I liked just quickly before we wrap this up, the moment when the mother does refuse to go, and there's that sort of quiet panel where he wasn't expecting it. You know, he thought his mom would want to come with him because it's his mom.
She's not convinced yet.
She's got to go sleep with the cop.
Because she's so, I mean, it's hard to lose your kid. So she's messed up.
No, absolutely. But I just liked that as a quiet moment where he didn't think that was even a possibility.
Yeah. Well, if he's 8 or whatever.
Yeah.
You know,
good stuff. Birthright's really good.
It is. It's a good book. I think it's the best thing that Josh Williamson has done.
I think so.
And he's had a pretty spectacular year for a guy who has mostly remained on the indie side of things.
So now there's a new Hellboy book.
I fear that you have made a mistake.
Uh-oh. What do you mean?
You didn't read this, right?
No.
I'm going to just say some names to you, and I'm just going to give you a summary, and I'm going to give you some information.
Well, first,
and then
the title
you tell
of the book.
Huh?
To first tell people the title of the book.
It's Hellboy and the BPRD, 1952.
Oh, so you didn't put the full title in the script here.
You know what? I can't be responsible for everything. I'm going to go on.
Right.
The writing team, as always with these stories, is Mike Mignola and John Arcudi. You know what you're going to expect with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
The penciler is Alex Maleev, colored by Dave Stewart.
Interesting.
So what you've got here is Hellboy going on his first mission with the BPRD, where Professor Broom says, hey, you know what? Take him along. And then the guys on the team, there's always three or four.
Oh, yeah, we don't want to.
Yeah, no, one of them wants to, one of them doesn't, one of them hates him. You know,
are they divorced?
so they fly down to, I don't know, South America or something like that. It doesn't matter. Alex Maleev drew it.
But how was it? Because I wouldn't think of him as a guy to draw a book featuring lots of monsters and things.
It works.
Yeah.
It works a lot. He drew this. It doesn't look super photo-y. And also, like, the contrast of what Hellboy looks like compared to, like, the sort of more realistic humans, mm-hmm. it doesn't look nearly as photo-referencey. It's, you know, like, he has a little bit of a spectrum.
Right. No, I absolutely. I wasn't even thinking of that. I just think of his style. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't necessarily immediately think of him for Hellboy. I wouldn't even think of him at all. Which is, so that's sure. interesting to me.
It works.
I might look into that.
Yeah, it very much works. And I think that this is my favorite era of BPRD.
The 50s? The post-war? Just the
early, yeah, post-war, early, like Hellboy's fully grown. Like, I like the kid stories, but there's only so far you can go with that. Mm-hmm. But like the coming of age Hellboy, like to see him where he is at this point, how everybody reacts to him at first, he's not famous yet. And like you can do that really fun thing where think of the range of reactions that people are going to have to seeing that person.
Right.
You know, in the modern quote unquote era, the current one, like everybody knows him. You know, everybody, yeah. you know, so there's not that same sort of shock, I guess, about him. So here you have to watch him. And some of them are like, yeah, he's fine. He's here to help. And that's, you know.
What is the deal with Hellboy and BPRD now? Where are they at story? Well, I mean, this has been going on for 20 years.
The current.
And we've been doing these era books, right? We did all those 40s books, and now I guess they're doing the 50s. Like, what is this story going?
Well, the current status quo is that Hellboy is in hell. And the article that I read this week featuring an interview with Mike Mignola said that Hellboy is in hell specifically because he didn't want to keep drawing the real world anymore. It's like, I didn't want to deal with perspective and all that stuff. And I'm going to just go ahead and ignore the fact that I read that. Because I really don't like Hellboy in Hell all that much. I mean, you know, it's Mignola. It's pretty to look at. Oh, crap. Blah, blah, blah. Now, over in BPRD, we're in the Hell on Earth.
Right.
Which is the whatever it is that has been building up with the frog monsters and the whatever have completely taken over. So it's sort of like an Armageddon of sorts, which I believe is what the prophecy of the Hellboy thing was, except he's not the king because... You know, so this probably all will come around and he'll be the one instead of to destroy the earth, to save the earth. I can't remember his name. He's like magic name, Rama, Tanzan, Usan, but whatever.
I'm sorry, what?
He's got some name, like Anang. Oh, fuck. I should know this. I used to know, like, the Hellboy, like, his true name.
Well, one thing
like,
is clear. He's not going to work here anymore.
Nah, he's not going to... Now I have to look that up because it's going to drive me nuts.
Right, so that's interesting. I would actually look into that because I was reading them in trades for a while, but I haven't been reading the new ones, but that's interesting. At least
it also could be possible that some of the things that made you not like the previous preview copies are fixed.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. That's a little behind the scenes for you kids out there.
Action Comics 36. Or is it 36,
35?
37. I opened the wrong issue. 37. Issue 36 was the pick of the week. 37 was probably the runner-up this week.
Anang and Rama. I was really close. I was really close. I was like, Ramadan, no. That's
Anang and Rama?
Anang and Rama.
Okay. Hellboy's better. It's snappier.
Well...
Anyway,
maybe from your Western perspective,
Action Comics 37 was the runner-up pick of the week this week. I really like this story, and I really like Aaron Kuda's art.
I didn't think that I would like this story based on sort of my personal preferences. And the last one, I was like, no, it's well done, but it's not really my thing. But I really did, actually. And on top of all that, and this is going to sound like a repeat, but like Aaron Kuda impressed the hell out of me.
Yes.
It was the moment that there was a flashback and he did it in a different style. And I stopped and I looked at the front to see if there was a guest artist for those. I was like, oh no, he did the whole thing like that. And I was really nice. I thought it was cool that they didn't have to bring anybody else in to do that thing. And the more I read it, the more I was thinking like, this is really refreshing for DC Comics of the last 3-4 years.
Yeah.
To have a guy like this who is atypical for what would be their, it's a left turn from what they would normally do. And I like
he never would have been on a book in the launch period.
Ooh, you know,
when it was very 90s-ized. And this is great. And I think what's interesting is it's very much a sort of a bottle episode story, right? Because they're all trapped in Smallville. Mm-hmm. And I did like the bit where he was going so fast he could get out of the trap for a second, but he would be pulled back in. And then I liked the toy man or toy kid, whatever he is, thinking he could monetize the fog. into, and then he gets pulled in. Like, I thought there was a lot of fun things going on in here. And then just the art is wonderful.
Okay. And
the Beard Superman's awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely.
So another good issue if you're a Superman fan. And what's going to be interesting, too, is that apparently they're changing his costume over in Superman with Romita. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if that, hopefully that'll bleed into other books, and I'll be interested to see what that's all about. Because if I'm Romita, I'm coming in going, no. This has got to go. Too many lines.
Yeah.
Too many lines. Now, did you pick up the Private Eye number 9 under the deadline of the show?
No.
You did not?
No.
Have you dropped off this book?
Uh-huh.
Oh, interesting. When did you drop off of it?
I'm not sure.
But a while back.
It really had to do with the way that it comes out, and I am not equipped to deal with the random nature of that.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, I got behind. And then once I got behind, I thought, I'm going to catch up on that at some point. And I am. Like, I need to just load a bunch of them up on my iPad before I go on, like, a flight or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is to me, you know, frankly, the Wednesday structure works very well for me.
Right.
I know what to hit. I know what's come out. I get those things.
See, I get an email from them, then I go download it.
I do too, but I might be doing something else at the time. Like, I have to, you know, it's like I got too much going on. This isn't a problem for other people, but that's what happened with me specifically.
Well, this is the second to last issue, so if you want to wait for however many months,
I'm totally going to do that.
And I'm pretty sure they're going to put out a PDF of the entire run in one file. I'm fairly certain they're going to do that. They've been talking about that, the letters pages. That's their version of trade. Anyway, so I don't know if you remember the story or not, but it's basically these bad guys are trying to launch the internet. You know, trying to bring the internet back. So they've been killing people who've been trying to stop them, and they're getting ready to shoot a satellite up into space to bring the internet back. And so we're getting close to that point. But this issue was really great because it featured a flashback to P.I., the main character's childhood, and we get to see his cranky old Gramps as a younger, slightly less cranky old Gramps. And I thought that was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's got some hair. He's smoking some marijuana cigarettes at a funeral. And he's just one of the best characters in comics.
I've referred to him in real life and tried to explain why it was interesting to people who don't read it, and it doesn't go over well, but it is.
So this is just us barreling towards the climax of the story. You know, this reminded me actually of Spies Like Us, because they're trying to stop a big giant missile launch, and there's a fight around a big giant missile. And actually, in this issue, lots of people get stabbed and or shot. And since this is only a 10-issue story, and since it's, you know, not going to continue, there's really no one is safe in this story, right? It's not like, you know, that Batman is going to make it out alive at the end, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone could die. The internet could come back. It could go badly. And so when some of the main characters get injured here, possibly fatally, it could be it. This could be, you know, for them. So it's interesting to have that sense of mortal danger in a story like this, because, you know, most of these books don't have that.
And no, hardly ever.
And so we'll see. To be concluded, and, you know, spoiler alert, the rocket goes off with the internet satellite on it. So we'll see if they end up bringing it back. Frank K. Vaughan is sort of a famous Luddite in comics, right? He said in the letters page he doesn't have any social media, doesn't do any of that stuff. And so it's been fun to see his take on the internet, and as it's the internet as sort of the bad guy. And we'll see how he ends his story with him bringing it back or not.
Do you feel like an enormous amount of envy for his position?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. He says it either here or in the previous issue, because I read them back to back, because you're right. I don't know how frequently they come out, infrequently. So I read this one and 8 and 9 together, and one of these letters pages, he said he does, you know, his life is about much more happier since he dropped off of all social media and stuff like that. So,
because he used to have like
he had a really popular
message board, yeah,
that he shut down rather famously, but. Marcus Martin is still the man on these.
He's an excellent artist.
He is fantastic, and the world building is still great. So Private Eye number 9. 10's the final issue. We'll see when that comes out, but I'm looking forward to that one. And then we also had Gotham Academy number 3 this week. And
Now you're going with this.
I missed the discussion that you guys had for the first one. I wasn't on the show for it. And I was very conflicted about that issue because I felt like I'd missed an issue. Mm-hmm. Like there was all these new characters and there was no explanation for who they were or anything, and I was very confused. And I just feel like that's the style. It's like, okay, we're going to drop you into the school and you're going to have to figure it out, like kind of like you're a new student. And I kind of like the Nancy Drew-esque aspect of it. It's like these kids trying to solve mysteries. So, you know, insert anyone you want, Scooby-Doo, whatever. Mm-hmm. And this one just happens to be more supernatural. And they're investigating this boarded up old dormitory building that they're not allowed to go into, and there was some sort of fire in there, and the main character has flashbacks to maybe she was in the fire. So there's enough interesting things going. I mean, primarily I really like the Carl Kershaw art a lot. He's someone who we liked a lot when he saw him on Wednesday Comics when he did the Flash story, and so that's fun to see him. But I kind of like the characters. The more I get to know them, I just have to get to know them more.
And you're willing to put in the time.
Yeah, I mean, I also like the fact that it's not unusual. It's not a usual Big Two book. You know, it's a book about a bunch of teen girls at a boarding school, mm-hmm. solving mysteries. So it's not going to be long for this world. I'll give it a shot. I like to try to support new endeavors. You know,
in Gotham.
Well, just no. I mean, if this had been book set in Central City, I would have checked it out. I like that DC is finally with a bunch of these books. It just happens they're in Gotham because when you have the cachet of Batman attached to you, you can try new things, right?
Yeah.
Or at least from DC's perspective. So I try to support them, at least, it may not love them, but I'll see what I can. I mean, I'm not going to last forever if I don't really dig it. But for now, I find enough interesting things in there.
All right, cool. I will do this next
one. Yes.
Because you won't stop.
I'm gonna have some water.
Won't stop talking.
I thought you had Private Eye. I wouldn't have put Hellboy at the top if I knew.
It's okay. We all learned stuff there. Mm-hmm. I think we got in a place. We got to discuss the nature of those digital comics.
Yes.
We can do that. That's fine. So listen. Listener. No, well, I mean you're valid too. You can contribute. You have a small part to play in what it is we're doing here at iFanboy. First thing, download the podcast, listen. All that stuff we're going to tell you later, leave reviews, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But if you're going and shopping on the Amazon.com, you can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, and there will be a link. And that is our affiliate link. You've seen it with other people. You have a choice of whose affiliate link you could be using.
Yeah.
So if you use ours, we thank you. And I have other friends who have podcasts and such, and they want you to use their link. And go screw. But if you want to help the show out really indirectly, you're buying stuff, especially now over the holiday season or whatever, this is actually a really important time for us, I guess, in terms of what we would say is fundraising, if we were talking about it in the public radio sense.
We're not unlike retailers. This is where we make our – or Josh, or we are like the businesses in Amity, in Jaws. This is our summer season.
Yeah. Amity, as you know, means friendship. It's just like ringing the dinner bell. I think –
I really want that jacket with all the anchors on it.
Is that available?
I almost just want to wear it just to annoy people who will remain nameless.
Yeah. Anyway.
No, I love it.
So that's a really good and sort of a simple way if you're going to buy stuff anyway. Man, you could use a new TV. Maybe use that link. That's a good thing.
I just did a bunch of impulse holiday shopping last night using Amazon, using the iFanboy link. So that's your kind of, if that's your style, if you go, oh, fuck, and then you have to start buying a bunch of books and stuff, mm-hmm. Amazon.
Yeah, it's a good way to go.
It's a good way to go.
If that's not your bag and you want to and you're able to contribute more directly, you can go to ifanboy.com/registration and you can choose a direct monetary donation, of course, which we appreciate. This stuff goes to paying for there are bills, there's hosting, there's stuff, there's equipment, there's stuff that we have to get, and that stuff really helps. You can do $3 a month or $30 a year. Those are the sort of standard option, but you can customize and choose whatever it is you're comfortable with if you want to help support the show. As I have helped support many of the shows that I listen to, I sent some money to the Serial podcast, like all middle class liberal white people. That's what we did. We sent them money because we couldn't help. We were like, okay, you want $10. And we did it because we have to know. But other, you know, in this sort of new age of media that we're doing here, you contribute directly to the things that you love. And it's kind of cool. It's
democratized. Tim Cup Media.
I don't know what that means.
Everybody's
that has something
got to do
their
with tin cup out with a nickel in it, shaking, they're shaking it.
Yeah, I thought Kevin Costner was going to come on.
Well, that'd be awesome.
Well,
our numbers would go up if he was on our show.
It would go up, but I don't think it would be a great show.
Maybe I don't know. He's pretty personable and funny.
Yeah, but what does he know about Aaron Cooter?
I don't know. We talk about whatever.
This week we're going to have a celebrity on and just talk about whatever.
Talk about Man of Steel. It was Jonathan Kent.
That's true.
Where did it all go wrong, Kevin?
Why did you have to die?
You did not have to die.
There was no reason for that to happen. Just that was dumber than Captain America just dive bombing his plane in the third act of the first movie. Why did he do that? It only occurred to me, by the way, because I finished the Making of Star Wars book this week.
Yeah.
It only occurred to me that the Joe Johnston who directed that and then Jurassic
you didn't
Park
know that?
Movie
same Joe
was
Johnston.
The storyboard guy from Star Wars. I thought that he was the Civil War general.
Even my girlfriend, who's a huge dog lover, was like, well, you don't save the dog in that scenario. He's your dad.
He doesn't have to die.
You're also Superman. You can save them both. But if it's a scenario where you choose one or the other, you know, no one's saying kill the dog. But if it's between your dad and a dog.
I'm saying maybe go back with some of your writing partners and try to figure out a situation where maybe he dies and you couldn't help him.
Like a heart attack. That's what makes it tragic.
Just something. Something that happened.
The thing about Superman's dad dying, Pa Kent, is that when he dies of a heart attack, that's a thing Superman can't do anything about.
He's powerless.
Which makes
it
sad. This is a scenario where he could have done something about it. And that's what makes it not sad, but stupid.
No. What's stupid is that he could have, but the reason that he didn't was stupid. And it was made up. Whereas opposed to Spider-Man, his great hubris was that he could have and didn't because he was stupid.
You know what? We promised we wouldn't talk about Man of Steel anymore. And we just,
really hard.
That was an end of the year gift for us.
Did that feel good?
It felt like a gift from me to you and you to me. So there you go. Merry Christmas. We're going to get into this next segment here, and this is going to be all you. So let's talk. I mean, I read a couple of these, but most of these are you.
Is it all me? Swamp Thing number 37. This is notable because I have decided that Charles Soule is allowed to write John Constantine.
Oh, interesting.
Because, he does a pretty good job of it. He shows up every once in a while in the Swamp Thing book, as he should, because people who know the history of John Constantine know that he first showed up as written by Alan Moore in a Swamp Thing book. That's
looking
where he
like
comes
Sting.
From. Looking like Sting. Was it in Quadrophenia specifically? I think that was the deal.
Like skinny, spiky-haired Sting.
It was like Mod Sting, Sting from Quadrophenia. Right.
Not lute playing Sting.
Anyway, he and Apple Swamp Thing met in an apple orchard located somewhere in New Hampshire.
I was reading this issue. I really like Charles Soule, the way he writes the book. I also really like the machine people. However, I don't like that it's still all these avatars fighting each other constantly.
I had that feeling.
It's 37 issues, and basically that's what it's been the entire time. And it's like the red and the gray, and now the machines. And now the machines may be interesting, and I kind of like it, but at the end of the day, it's still what it is. And tell a different story with this character. There's lots of them.
I know what you're getting at.
I wonder if they're afraid because of the Alan Moore stuff to try to go in that direction. But like,
well, I mean, like it's a formula. It's a thing that they can do. It sets up a mythology, and it's the same thing. It's the Green Lantern thing.
It's the same problem. That was interesting and novel at first, and then after 3 years, it was like, can we do something else besides these cores fighting each other? Now it's the same thing with Swamp Thing.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
there's nothing against the creative team. I think they're fantastic. I think Jesus Sayaz is a great artist for this book. He's wonderful for this book. And Charles Soule can write all these characters, but it's just like, okay, what's the next?
Well, he's almost done with it, so.
No, but then they'll be the fucking haystacks or whatever.
Yeah, Bo. You know,
they'll be
the haystacks.
Synthetics, plastics.
Yeah.
Plastics.
I liked the reveal at the end.
Yeah, I did too.
It's good.
It's a good book. It's just I want a different core.
I absolutely understand what you're saying. And I think I pretty much agree. But it's well done, so it's a little. And also, Apple Orchard in New Hampshire. Pretty sure that was the place up the street. I'm just saying. But he does a good, and like Constantine was, I don't know, he looked right. He was smoking. I was like, all right, I'm just going to imagine this is my job.
He was smoking in not the most recent episode, but the one before that.
He should.
Yeah.
He should. He got out of cancer, famously. Wolf Moon number one is a new number one from Vertigo Comics, and as I am contractually bound...
I love that you will shun every other comic geek thing and say you're not a part of it, but you'll buy every... You will read every Vertigo number one.
It's true. It's true. The other reason is this was by Colin Bunn as drawn by Jeremy Hahn.
Mm-hmm.
They've both done stuff I like. I like Jeremy Hahn a great deal. That being said, if you... like a pretty much straight up werewolf movie story, werewolf story, you might like this. I am not the target market for this kind of thing. I thought the dialogue was really well done.
Well, you're not a horror guy, despite the fact that you really like the other book we talked about, the action comics, but...
Yeah, I'm not a horror guy, and then also, like as you really get into like the super traditional monster stuff, you know, like Frankenstein,
like Wolfman,
yeah, that kind of stuff. Like, I really doesn't, I wouldn't ever seek it out as a thing. But I read it, and I think if you dig wolf stories, this will probably be good. It looked good. It read good. It's the setup is sort of that the wolf is, it's not like a single carrier. It shows up sort of randomly, and it just
like
kills for fun, I guess. Like, they're sort of trying to figure out what it is. And there's this one guy, and he's following the wolf around. We're trying to figure out why, and I think it's because it killed his kid, or he was the wolf around or something. There's like a bit of a mystery of the people involved in the wolf chasing going on. It's all well done, well set up. It's not my bag. Looks good. Hahn is also drawing the Constantine book, I think.
Huh?
I'm sorry, Constantine. the DC version.
Solo?
Yeah. But if that sounds like something you want, go for it.
Well, you're not a horror guy, but you are a war guy, war comics guy. So I was very excited to talk to you finally about War Stories number 3, the final part of 3.
Just go ahead.
You son of a bitch. You didn't read this, did you?
I'm going to read it. I'm going to read it when it just is one thing, because I it's the same thing. I got behind. And then
this is issue 3 of 3 of the story.
I have Vertigo number ones to read that I don't really want to read.
Well, this was the first arc that was on Avatar. This is Garth Ennis' War Stories. Speaking of Tin Cup Comics. And this was good. It wasn't great. It might have been the weakest War Stories he's done.
Well, that's not helping.
You'll still like it. Because the best part of this is that the artist, who is not really great at drawing people, is really great at drawing planes. And this is all about a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
In a B-27, I think. Or B-17? I'm opening the issue. And the Flying Fortress, which one was that?
B-17.
Come on.
Flying Fortress B-17 or the B-24 Liberator or the B-52?
The Flying Fortresses.
The Flying Fortress is the B-17.
Yes, that's what it was, B-17.
That's the Memphis Belle one?
Yes, that's what he is.
24s are the Liberators. Those are the ones that Doolittle's raid over Japan.
Right.
And the B-52? What's the one that dropped the bomb? Is that a B-52?
Probably. Anyway... This was there was a little dual storytelling going on. One was the missions. The other was that this pilot had met a widowed English woman, a little older than him, well, 9 years older, with a kid. And he's been, you know, slowly, not romancing, but spending time with, making time with this woman. And the kid's been not liking him because his dad's dead from the war. And so it's been surviving the battle and also surviving the kid and navigating that whole thing. And it was good, but, you know, if I'm being honest, it's probably one of the weaker ones that he's done. Mm-hmm. You know, I think back to, like, Night Witches and those books. Those were really so amazing. And even going way back to his Vertigo War Story stuff. So, you know, he's been doing this for a long time. It's not all going to be spectacular. But really, Josh, for you and anyone else who likes this kind of thing, just check it out for the stuff, the war stuff, the plane stuff. This guy can draw the heck out of planes.
I don't mean not to.
Yeah,
I'll load those up with all the private eye stuff.
Although the storytelling got a little wonky. This ended in a big, big battle in the sky, and a bunch of people, you know, got shot up in this plane. And I was losing track of who was who, but I guess that's part of the fog of war aspect of it.
That's a storytelling excuse.
I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt here.
Yeah,
they're all wearing, you know, the masks for the atmosphere and their helmets. I don't know who's who.
They had no heat up there.
Right, it's cold.
That was just for oxygen. But other than that, they were freezing, and especially Sean Astin in the ball turret.
Well, was the bombardier in the front? The ball turret in the front.
Ball turret's the one on the belly.
That's right.
Then there's the tail gunner out back, who's in a similar situation, but the ball turret guy's completely enclosed.
Yeah.
Bombardier sits under the pilot.
Yeah, he sights the bombs. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
This was okay. I'm going to say okay. Grayson number five, I wanted to mention briefly because it was an interesting story. It was what would happen if Dick Grayson, Helena Bertinelli, and Midnighter crashed a plane in Saudi Arabia and they had to protect a baby. And that was really the whole issue. They just were traveling across the desert as Midnighter kept advocating they kill the baby. And because they couldn't take care of it anyway. And the heart was like this heart at superpowers. Actually, what was interesting was it became sort of like an Arabic Superman story because the baby has these special powers. There was some magic in his heart or something. And that's what, Dick Grayson's organization, Spiral, and Midnighter's organization, I can't remember who, both want the baby to get that power.
So and, Midnighter with Dick Grayson, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's been a very interesting thing. They keep threatening to fight. And they're just teasing that out.
I think he's attracted to Dick.
Well, obviously.
Grayson.
Who wouldn't be? He's a handsome man who doesn't realize how handsome he is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And he would be the star of every Hallmark Christmas movie. Anyway, so at the end, what happens is a truck, an old pickup truck with a Saudi Arabian couple comes across a passed out Dick Grayson with the baby, and it sort of like mimics the Jonathan Martha Kent moment, and they take the baby home because they always wanted a baby but couldn't have one. And this is a kid's superpowers. In fact, at the end, the mother had left her cell phone in the crib, and the kid picks it up and crushes it. So I don't know if this is a story they're going to continue at some point.
He just hates technology.
At some point, it was just ringing off. Somebody kept texting. It was just, I don't know if it was a story they're going to set up for later, or if it was just one of those kind of cool things that's going to be out in the world. But it was a really interesting story, and then the ending. I really liked it. I think it might be my favorite issue of Grayson. And now, here we go. I blew this one, because I meant to read this, and I forgot. It was sitting on my stack, and I forgot to read it.
Yeah. Did you read the first Tooth and Claw?
No, I had them both together.
Okay, that's a lot of reading, to be honest with you, the two of them. Tooth and Claw number two is the second issue of Kurt Busiek, and what is the name? Dewey. Ben Dewey, I think. I'm going to say Benjamin Dewey. That's what it feels like to me. Hey, I was right. Jordi Belair in colors. It looks good. Their sort of fantasy magic world of anthropomorphic animals, and they all, one of the people who, it's very structured society, and a warthog says, we can use our magic to summon the great champion, and then that will fix stuff. And it causes everything in the world to crash down around them. And so this is the aftermath after everything has fallen.
This is definitely Paul's kind of book. Are you enjoying this?
I am, but almost more for the elements than the overall aspect of it. I really like how Kurt Busiek's mind works in terms of storytelling. I really enjoy watching him work things out because he's masterful. He's very, very good, as we've seen him do over and over again on Astro City. Just in being able to come up with all of this stuff and really telling it clearly. And the other thing about this is it has a super, I don't know how long I want to do this forever, but it has a really traditional comic book speaking style. Like there are all these magic animals, and like the scent, it's like, the Scrolls of Perceptos, I require them. And I was just like, that's all. I love shit like that. It makes me laugh when people can do it sort of quite, exactly. Like everybody's a little, formal.
A little overwrought.
Yep. It's like, like Thor speak or something like that. And so in this one, there's casts of people, well, not people, but animal people. Mm-hmm. And there was a thing with these buffalo people in the last one. And then the other guy comes to a bit of a social consciousness, and then the champion, awakes, and there's a lot of schlong. sorry, that's really the main thing. There is a reveal about that. And that sort of is,
to read it. And I, what's funny is
I'm trying not to say anything.
That's fine. What's funny is that, Since I haven't read the first one, when I looked at the list this week, I didn't see it, didn't register because it's not a title that would stick out because I hadn't read it. But I pulled it aside anyway to read because I knew I wanted to. So this morning when I was picking up the Image books to read, like when Birthright, and I saw it and I went, oh, that must be out next week, and then I just didn't read it.
It's really well done. It's a good looking book. It's a well-written book. It's really fleshed out world, and there's a lot left to see, which is going to be a really interesting ride.
Well, now I'll definitely make a point, hopefully this weekend, to read it.
Yep.
So those are the comics we're going to talk about this week. It was a weird week. I didn't read a single Marvel book.
I read one.
Which I don't know when that's ever happened.
What was the Marvel book I read this week? I don't even remember it. That's not good in general.
Yeah, so that's weird. But those are the books. If you want to talk about other books, go to ifanboy.com. You can find the post for this show and talk about these books, other books you read this week, anything you want to talk about.
Inhuman, Charles Soule.
At ifanboy.com.
Good series. I don't think we've talked about it very much at all. I actually like it.
It's our second to last show of the year. We wanted to go over some bests of the year. On the old website, we used to run a bunch of best posts. And so we wanted to just highlight some of our favorite series, some of our favorite writers, artists, not by any means make it a definitive list or declare one best, but just a couple of people that we felt like really owned it this year. And what was interesting to me, and I'll just start off the conversation, is that I was looking through the list of all of our picks of the week in preparation for next week's show. And it's really well spread out this year. You know, like in past years, we would have a lot of repeat books, a lot of repeat creators. But there wasn't really anyone who dominated. Scott Snyder probably did. But, you know, there was also a pretty good spread of people.
Can we just can we take, I'm going to mention something that we can table it. We can get back to it at some point or another.
Mm-hmm.
But Scott Snyder and Frank Miller doing Dark Knight 3. Just table that. Put it off to the side.
I've been ignoring that story.
We could probably figure out if it's a real thing or not. But I will. Just my first instinct when I saw it was, all right, I'd be down for that.
I would be down for it, but I just not meant emotionally ready to enter that story.
Oh, I was like, I actually got like, I got uncharacteristically like, oh, because I think that could work.
If you go by picks of the week. And we're gonna go through the numbers next week. Scott Snyder is probably the writer of the year. He had six of them, which is by far the most of any.
Spread out between all of us?
I haven't gotten breaking down the numbers like that yet. Right. I haven't done the calculations yet. Right. But I'm just looking at the list here and I see his name like six times, which is more than anybody else. But you know, in terms of writers, this was an interesting year. We had a lot of Image books. We had a lot of guys really flexing their muscles off of superheroes. Mm-hmm. I think you couldn't really talk about it this year without talking about Remender and his Image work. And I'm even really enjoying Axis, his Marvel crossover. So I think he's having a really great year. Scott Snyder had a really great year between Batman, and he ended up The Wake, and he brought back American Vampire, and he's doing Witches. I mean, that's a really great spread of genre right there. And I mean, it's all kind of horror-y based, but different kinds of horror, sci-fi horror, sort of traditional horror.
I don't feel like that. Like, there's been other years where it was just clear. We would just go, oh, Geoff Johns.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's Jason Aaron.
Right.
But I don't feel that this year. And I had a hard time. I mean, for the one thing, over at Marvel, you're still in this situation where we've been with Marvel now, whatever, for a couple years where there's not many guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a few, and I feel like Kelly Sue DeConnick is at a really good year,
mm-hmm.
but I also at the same time, like, her books didn't really done anything for me, so it's hard for me to speak to it, but I definitely see a groundswell. Like when she does a book, it's exciting for people. I mean, like, that's one of the names that sort of pops up, but I don't know that I can speak to it. And at the same time, one of the other names that showed up that I think is interesting to me is that I think Mark Miller's had a great year.
Yeah.
In really breaking out of, did a two or three Image series and really broke out of what we thought Mark Miller was. And for a guy who has achieved the mountaintop like that and been almost completely written off by me,
mm-hmm.
It was really cool to see like the stuff that I remembered about what I liked about his work early on.
Right.
So I think writer wise, that was a really interesting writer.
It's hard to still not talk about guys like Jason Aaron. I'm looking through the list and Thor went through three quarters of the year. I mean, mm-hmm. and we love that book. And I love Southern Bastards.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of those writers where right now, almost everything he's doing, I'm really loving.
And they're ordering a million copies of Star Wars number one.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good.
That book's going to be huge.
Yes, it is.
This was an interesting year.
I mean, and then I guess one of the other names we had actually just talked about, Tooth and Claw, but Kurt Busiek.
True.
I think is had releasing another book that I think is like he used to do. He's actually been doing creator owned work for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, Aerosmith, Shock Rockets, you know, like he's done this all along. This isn't new for him. He didn't like, oh, let me step away from Hulk for a bit. He had always done that. Guy has an expansive imagination. The thing to me that's interesting is that A, they're, you know, his work's very different from itself, but B, like he brought back Astro City. And he's kept it up, mm-hmm. and that's amazing. That it's not getting old, and it's not old or tired.
It's better than it's been in years, actually.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
because it had really like it had been. It's been around 20 years. It's been around a long time, and for a while it got not good. And we thought, well, that's it. And then all of a sudden, like renewed focus, you know, creative energy. Like he's making it great every time it comes out.
Right.
So that's really cool to see. Again, I sort of like Miller in a different way. You know, like he's sort of come back to assert his.
Well, I think you skill. Can also throw Warren Ellis into that too.
My first book that we were going to talk about series was that 6 issues of Moon Knight.
Well, I mean, started with Moon Knight, but then he also has a couple of books at Image now, mm-hmm. and they're all.
Yeah.
And I feel like I haven't been reading his books regularly in a long time, but he was also one of the people that. Helped establish iFanboy in terms of the content. Like we were all loving this. This is when we started the show. We started iFanboy. It was back during Planetary and Transmetropolitan and
yep.
and that whole sort of era, and the Authority. And
I think the thing about those is that those were all very long, and I feel like he doesn't have the attention span to do that.
Sure,
anymore.
But I feel like this year I read a lot of Warren Ellis books, which I had. And I could not say probably for the last 7 years.
Yeah.
And I really like them. Moon Knight was a really spectacular run. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about artists then. That leaves us like guys like Declan Shalvey.
I mean, that's again going to be the first thing on my list is his work on Moonlight. Moonlight.
Moonlight.
I think that was him taking a major step forward. Mm-hmm. I've always thought he's a great artist. I mean, he is. He's somebody who has a style of his own. It's definitely like it's his thing. There's influences from other people, but when he got that Moon Knight thing, and now he's off, he's going to do creator owned stuff. You haven't seen him for a little while because that's getting done. He works tirelessly. He cares about his craft, and as soon as you open those Moon Knight pages and flip through them, you saw like oh that's next level stuff from him. So he should be one of those guys, you know, right now, which is really cool.
I would also mention like the whole Image stable.
Well, I mean, to be honest,
not the whole stable because they put out a lot of books. But
my first, if you were to ask me, the one thing I haven't had to struggle with, if you were going to ask me what artist I think just blew me away this year, I'm going to say Matteo Scalera. Who needs to fucking stop it?
Matteo Scalera. I would say Greg Tocchini on Low. I'd say Jamie McKelvey, Wes Craig on Deadly Class.
Yeah,
you know there was,
and all those are great, but compared, like I really look at the Matteo Scalera stuff as, it like from out of nowhere, massive energy, massive imagination, you know, right up there with you know like the Quietly stuff that we saw this year. Like it's been that good for me. I've really loved it.
Yeah, I mean I was making a list, and he's the first name I wrote down actually. So yeah. I mean I think if we were probably doing a list, we said we weren't going to rank them, but if we were doing a top 10 list, I think probably he'd be number one.
Right.
This year. Mm-hmm. Because in the middle of that great run on Black Science, he also did a great issue of Batman.
Yes, he did. I forget. Yeah, it was a pick of the week.
Yeah. So it's just like we loved him before, but this was the year he really broke out of that into a big deal status.
Yeah.
And we talked about Aaron Cooter in the show. I think he'd be worth a mention. As somebody who's really like, you know, you're taking a Superman book, Action Comics, the original superhero, you know, title, and not literally, but you know what I mean, mm-hmm. and making it his own in a style that's not in a house style of DC. And it's really interesting and elevates that book, which is what you want. You know, the art should tell the story and also should elevate it. Mm-hmm. And he's doing that with Action Comics.
You know, and at the same time, I think Fiona Staples,
mm-hmm.
and the work that she's doing on Saga. Is, you know, it's top five in the industry,
yeah.
You know, like just, and you know, again, totally unique, totally, you know, her own thing is that world gets fleshed out more and more. That has that book has a visual language to it, has a style, and it just works. It works so well.
Yeah, I can't, I mean, I can't imagine anyone else doing that book. It wouldn't work.
Yeah.
As I say, they'll probably be a fill-in artist at some point. I mean, even Why the Last Man had fill-in artists. But, you know, it's she's created this world, and it's so believable. And we talked earlier about Bresson's stuff on Birthright and how designed it is. And she does the same thing there. She's designed this whole world full of aliens and creatures that feels very real and lived in.
Yeah, definitely.
Like Star Wars, like the first Star Wars.
Yep.
Comes alive.
Yeah, which is exactly the thing with that.
Yeah. And it's become cliche to say, but I think Greg Capullo is still doing masterful stuff on Batman. Cliff Chang wrapped up Wonder Woman this year with Brian Azzarello. He did great work. This was Michael Arcon, definitely. This was really, you know, for a modern era that's mostly about writers, this was a really great artist year. And I think this is probably, I would say it was the year of the artist.
It feels like it for me.
I think there's more great art going on right now in mainstream comics than I've seen in a while.
The craftsmen too.
Yeah.
Like they have to bring the style and then they, Phil Noto.
He did a big step forward this year.
Yeah. And like his skill on top of his style, which are, you know, sort of two separate things. They're working really well together. I mean, it's too many. It was really hard to start narrowing stuff down. And there's just a lot of skill behind it. Like, I feel like everybody took this leap. I mean, we're not even talking about Chris Somney, but because at the point where he's so good.
Frank Avila on Afterlife with Archie. I mean, there's a lot of there's a lot of great art going on
right
now.
We didn't talk about, we mentioned her, I think, last year, but Jordi Belair as the unifying color force of comic books in general.
Right. We didn't mention her because she's by default colors all of the comics.
Yeah, her, Nathan Fairbairn doing the coloring also has some really great stuff. Yeah, and Dave Stewart, yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, it's an embarrassment of riches, I guess, sort of.
I'm going to throw out two names, one from each category that we didn't mention, but we should. Esad Ribic on the art side.
You beat me to it.
And Charles Soule on the writer side.
Definitely. And I think you could even say you could mix it up a little more and you could add Gibber, Hartman, and Karina Becko for doing a lot of things.
Star Wars Legacy, story. And then they did that Hulk thing, and they're doing that Hulk arc, a two-issue arc. And
just did that Wonder Woman story we talked about last really week.
Good. And also the creator-owned stuff, Kinski and things like, and the projects that are coming out from other companies. So I think that I don't know if I can name or not, so I didn't. That's why that
Josh Williamson is another guy that we just talked about. I think that's his first pick of the week. He's been around for a real long time, and I really like the kind of career that he's set up for himself. He does his own books. He does some stuff at Dark Horse. You know, he's done Marvel and DC before a bit, but like he's doing these books with Skybound, Nailbiter, and Ghosted. I want to say it's Ghosted. I keep saying the word Haunted, Ghosted, whatever.
It's Ghosted.
You know, those are genre horror books for the most part.
Yeah.
And again, not really my thing, but they're good books. And I it's a cool career that he set up for himself because he's a guy who's making his way, he's making his living, you know. And he wasn't a big star from Marvel or DC,
right?
But then he's got these other books and he's got Birthright going on now. That's going to be a big deal, I think.
I think what we're doing in this rambling conversation is highlighting how great a year and how great a time it is for comics right now. Mm-hmm. There's so many great books. So, you know, we talked about this. We joked before how there's too many great books. You can't read them all. A lot of great talent. I'm going to go ahead and say this was 2014 was the year of the artist in comics.
Steve Lieber.
Great year. So yeah. Those are some of the best things in comics this year. Again, by no means comprehensive. I'm sure we forgot something pretty glaring. And if we did, you can tell us, I'm sure.
My favorite series of the year was Minimum Wage.
Maximum Minimum Wage? Oh, that was the big
one. Maximum Minimum Wage was the collection. Minimum Wage was the 6-issue return to it.
I thought it was the Royals.
That was my favorite. Well, I like them both. Okay, I can't say favorite. It's too hard. Either Royals, Masters of War. That was like, they're very different books, so it's easy to like both of them.
I thought it was Lazarus. Stuff.
No, but that's the one that if you don't read, I will come for you.
So that you got to figure that's got to be near the top if you're going to come for people.
To put it this way. It is the kind of year where it's impossible to pick a favorite.
True.
And that's because of diversity. And I really like that. That's been a lot of fun.
Great year for comics, 2014. Mm-hmm. Next week, we'll come back. We'll go through the picks of the week and talk about you know, those numbers and how often things got picked and that kind of thing. It's always fun to look back and see how the year was to see if people's perceived biases are correct.
They usually are.
We're going to skip the audience question because we went long, but you can email us at contact@fanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS-326-2697. Tell us who you are, where you're from. Keep your voicemail around 30 seconds if you call in.
And Scott already worked with Stephen King, so he made that work.
I'm not saying I don't want to read it. I just saw, I read the headline and I went, nope, can't deal with that right now.
It's like Bruce Campbell and Nathan Fillion getting cast in everything all at one time.
Yeah, I can't.
But not, because that would be stupid because they're old.
So real quickly, the holiday schedule. Next week, episode 466. Is our last Pick of the Week show of the year. That'll come out December 14th. The week after that, December 21st, you'll get the all-media show with me, Josh Flanagan, and Mike Romo talking about the year in comics and movies and TV shows and books and other things. That's usually lots of fun and long. It'll be a long show. Then we'll take in our traditional year and holiday break. This one will be slightly longer just because of the timings of things, but we'll be back with episode 467 on January 11th.
I also got to get my drink on.
You get a couple of weeks. We need a week in there for Josh to dry out for his traditional year-end booze fest. So next week,
I don't drink. Asterisk.
466 next week. All media show the week after, and then it'll be a bit of a break, and we'll be back 467 on the 11th. And meanwhile, head over to ifanboy.com. Comment on this show. Talk about this week's books. You can find all of our podcasts there, including our special edition shows, and the all media show will be there as well. All that is ifanboy.com.
You could follow us at twitter.com/ifanboy or facebook.com/ifanboy. And had you done that, you would have seen what the pick of the week was before you listened to this show, and you would have had a chance to read up on it and say, man, I got to get those three issues of Birthright because they're pretty sweet.
Yep.
You can also follow us individually at C.S. Kilpatrick or at Fuzzy Typewriter, who is on a train. And
if
J.A.
you had
Flanagan.
Already followed him, you would know he was on a train and you'd follow his train adventures.
You would. His train adventures?
His train adventures.
That's a book we need to pitch. Train Ventures.
Train Ventures.
That could be either about adventures on a train or business building businesses about trains, which wouldn't sell as well.
Or the band Train. Nothing? You don't even know who they are.
No. Funny story.
Uh-oh.
I was in a motel room at a bike thing or something, whatever, and I was watching the Today Show, which I don't ever watch, and some band, like they were like, we're going to be back with a musical guest after this. I was like, ugh, it'll probably be like Train. And I didn't really know who Train was. And they started playing and it was actually Train. I was like, oh, look at that. I nailed it. And they were exactly what I thought they would be. In fact, even worse.
Finally, if you like the show, write a review on iTunes. Better yet, tell your friends about the podcast or any podcast you listen to. You know, suddenly the media has discovered podcasts as if they never existed before.
Apparently, that's a thing now.
So, I feel like I've never read these podcasting is the future articles before, certainly not in 2006. But you can introduce your mom to the podcast. If you didn't get to listen, have her listen during your Thanksgiving meal, maybe during this upcoming holiday season, you can have your family gatherings all sit around the fire and listen to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. We would really appreciate that. And help us spread the iFanboy love all around the holiday season.
Mm-hmm.
Just muck it all in there, all the crevices.
Oh, yeah, baby. Get that mayonnaise on there so it browns the skin.
That is it for this week's show. Thank you for listening. Paul will be back with our final pick of the week of the year next week. My name is Connor.
And I'm Dave Grohl.
You wish. You wish you were Dave Grohl.
I'm not surprised he's not on the show.
See you next week. Oh, come let us adore him. Oh, come let us adore him. Oh, come let us adore him, Christ the Lord.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.